From NPR News in New York, this is the Bryant Park Project with Allison Stewart and Luke Burbank.
Welcome to the Bryant Park Project, your source for news, views, and fubar. More on that coming up. I'm Allison Stewart.
I'm Luke Burbank. Allie, if you've noticed, I've been looking kind of fashionable this week, looking extra sassy. It's because Fashion Week is going on right across the street from us in Bryant Park, and I'm going to take a little jaunt down there in this hour.
Excellent. We're going to look at the return of viral marketing. This woman, great singer on YouTube, became a sensation. Wall Street Journal did a little digging, found out she's actually already been signed to a major record label. We'll talk to the author of that article, and we'll also hear what that girl has to say about it.
Also, we've got a football update with a 21-year-old football prognosticator. He's been doing it since he was 11. His name is Andy Benoit, and we're going to hear from him. Plus, we've got the big news with Rachel Martin, but first, here's today's BPP big story.
It involves the Patriot Act. The big story is one that reaches into your phone records and computer cache. A federal judge has struck down a key part of the USA Patriot Act that allows investigators to issue so-called national security letters, or NSLs, you might have heard them call. They issue these to internet service providers and phone companies to demand customers' phone and internet records.
This all started about 6 months ago on March 10th. When it was revealed that the FBI was improperly using these powers under the Patriot Act, this is what FBI Director Robert Mueller said back at the time.
The question should and must be asked, how could this happen? Who is accountable? And the answer to that is, I am to be held accountable.
Kind of a giant my bad from the director.
Oh, but apparently that was not enough. A lawsuit was brought by the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of an unnamed internet company that received one of these NSLs. And that led to yesterday's decision by a U.S. district judge that said investigators must obtain a court's approval when ordering internet providers and phone companies to turn over records without telling customers.
Under the Patriot Act, the government does actually not need court approval to issue the NSLs. That led the judge to say it was the legislative equivalent of breaking and entering with an ominous free pass to the hijacking of constitutional values.
That judge is quite a writer there.
Yeah.
The judge in the case immediately stayed the decision, allowing time for the government to appeal. A spokesperson for the Justice Department said, quote, "We are reviewing the decision and considering our options at this time."
That is the BPP big story. We're going to have the week in Iraq in a moment. First, though, we're going to check in with Rachel Martin, who's got the news.
This is NPR.
Hey, everyone. Here's what's going on in your world. The U.S. Senate today voted overwhelmingly to adopt legislation that would slash government subsidies to student loan firms and use the money saved to boost student aid by $20 billion. The subsidy cuts are expected to hurt the profits of major lenders such as Sallie Mae, Citigroup, and others. That's according to industry analysts. The House of Representatives is expected to vote later today on the bill. President Bush has said he would sign the bill if it gets to his desk. And pull out some American troops and scrap the Iraqi police force. Those were the recommendations this week from a panel of retired senior military commanders. The 20-member group, led by retired Marine Corps General James Jones, released its own assessment of the war in Iraq yesterday, which was commissioned by Congress. The report calls on the U.S. to begin methodically drawing down some of its troops so that Iraqi forces can step up and take more responsibility for securing the country. The panel also recommended disbanding the Iraqi police force and building a new one from scratch. Speaking before the Senate Armed Services Committee, Jones said there are serious problems in the force.
Overall, the progress of police force is judged to be unsatisfactory.
This report follows a GAO study released this week that said little progress has been made on the 18 benchmarks for success. And these Iraq report cards are coming in just days before the top general in Iraq, David Petraeus, and U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker give their much-anticipated report to Congress about how the war is going on the ground. And there's disturbing news about suicide rates in young people. According to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, suicides among children and young adults rose by 8% in 2004. That's the largest rise in 15 years. In 2004, almost 4,500 young people aged 10 to 24 committed suicide. In 2003, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration issued a warning that the use of antidepressant drugs could increase the chances of suicidal thoughts. in children and young adults. And President Bush was in Sydney, Australia this week talking to Asian Pacific leaders, but his visit took an uncomfortable turn when he was in talks with South Korean President Roh Moo-hyun. For once, it wasn't the war in Iraq that was at issue, but the Korean War. And at the end of the summit, the South Korean leader challenged Bush to make a declaration calling for an end to the Korean War. That conflict ended in a truce in 1953, not a peace treaty, so the two sides are technically still at war. Bush reaffirmed the U.S. position that Washington will consider the war formally over only when North Korean leader Kim Jong-il II dismantles his nuclear program. We'll hear more about this coming up next in the show. I'm Rachel Martin. The news is always online at npr.org. Back to Luke and Allison.
Thank you, Rachel. Allison, as you just heard Rachel talking about in South Korea, it's sort of an interesting thing played out there because usually these kind of little photo ops are just that, photo ops.
Yes.
But there was some actual real stuff going down.
Well, it's terribly uncomfortable to watch this video. I don't know if you've seen it. We'll have to link to it on our blog. But you have these two world leaders facing the press, and one of the world leaders just decides to go off script, basically. I mean, these are scripted events where I say something nice about your country, you say something nice about my country, and then kumbaya, we're going to hold hands and go forward.
Yeah, although it turns out, I didn't actually know this, we're still in a war with North Korea.
Yes.
Officially speaking, that war has never been ended. There was a certain truce, but anyway, Don Gagne, our excellent White House correspondent, had a piece on kind of what went down. Let's hear some of that.
I might be wrong. I think I did not hear President Bush mention a declaration to end the Korean War just now. Did you say so, President Bush?
President Bush, suddenly looking a little confused, responded that such talks depend on North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il ending his nuclear weapons program.
I said it's up to Kim Jong-il as to whether or not we're able to sign a peace treaty to end the Korean War. He's got to get rid of his weapons in a verifiable fashion.
But No continued to press, stating that peace talks don't need to wait. He said a declaration of peace ending the Korean War would help relations on the Korean Peninsula and thus aid in the effort to get North Korea to disarm.
If you could be a little bit clear in your message, I think that's very much
appreciated. I can't make it any more clear, Mr. President. We look forward to the day when we can end the Korean War. But that will end. That will happen when Kim Jong-il verifiably gets rid of his weapons programs and his weapons.
President Bush seemed annoyed and quickly ended the session.
Thank you, sir.
We should have clarified probably going into that. That was the South Korean president's translator.
Yes.
You heard a female voice right at the beginning and were confused. That was what was going on. After the press conference, the White House spokesman attributed any appearance of conflict or misunderstanding to that interpreter lady.
All right. So another big story. It's a word that we've learned to translate. Arguida. It's the Portuguese legal term for formal suspect, and that's what a UK woman, Kate McCann, has just become in the kidnapping case of her own daughter, Madeleine McCann. You may have heard about this. Several months into the investigation, Portuguese police say they found traces of Madeleine's blood in a car her parents rented after the little girl went missing. And now authorities are eyeing her mother as a suspect in this case. Joining us now to give us some of the details around these developments is Barney Chowdhury, a BBC reporter in London. Hey, Barney, thanks for being with us.
No problem. It's a pleasure to be on.
Is this a huge surprise in this case? Were the parents ever really suspects?
Not at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Not. It has come as a huge surprise, I think. People sort of have always sort of said that, you know, these are the victims of a horrible crime that's been committed. They've always said that they were having dinner, they'd been checking on their kids, everything seemed fine, and then come 10 o'clock on May the 3rd, 2007, their world fell apart. And ever since then, they've always maintained that their daughter, a three-year-old at the time, now 4 years old, has been abducted somewhere, and they've been all around the world sort of trying to drum up some sort of support to make sure that if anybody spots this four-year-old toddler, that they are alerted to the police. So being sort of thought of as a suspect has come as a huge shock, not only to them, to their family and friends in the village where they live in Leicestershire in the East Midlands.
Let's back up a little bit because there was a lot of information in there. When this little girl went missing, it was about 6 months ago, right? Where did the investigation initially turn? Where did they look?
There's always been a bit of dispute over that. The Portuguese police have always come into some sort of criticism, saying that they didn't act soon enough, they were really laboured, and that they didn't treat it as an abduction from the beginning, so they spent a lot of time. And so on May the 3rd, so we're talking about 5 months away, the little girl went missing or hasn't been seen since then. Now, there were reports later on, a few months later, that she'd been spotted somewhere around Europe. And all those sort of spots where she was actually spotted, they were looked into, and nothing concrete has ever come from that. And the newspapers, the Portuguese newspapers, at the end of August, started running headlines to sort of say that the McCanns were believed by the police that they had killed Madeleine, and that they were going to be told as suspects. And that's when it all started. Now, the McCanns have vehemently denied that. And we have libel laws in this country, and they are suing the paper as a result of that. So that's where we are at the moment. Nothing has been spotted. As you said, some blood has been found in a hire car, apparently, and also some specks of blood in the apartment itself. And so those sorts of information are coming out in dribs and drabs, and they're having to be checked out to find out exactly what has happened and whether we know something concrete will come out over the next few weeks or so, I should imagine.
Barney, I was in Ireland at the beginning of the summer, and out on the Dingle Peninsula, which is about as far out on Ireland, the country, as you can get.
Yeah.
And in a bar window was a poster for "Have you seen Madeleine McCann?" And it really struck me, this far out is how far the search for this little girl and how it has gripped Europe. You had this, the family, they met with the Pope.
Yep.
They had pop stars coming out saying, "Help this
David
family."
Beckham.
Yeah, can you describe for us just how big a story this has been?
Imagine, I mean, this has got to be every parent's worst nightmare, hasn't it? And it strikes a chord. We have a toddler who's awfully attractive. We've got parents who are awfully attractive. We have people who can empathise with what is going on. I'm a father of a daughter, and I now won't let my daughter out of my sight if I can help it, because it really is that simple. It has struck a chord with everybody, and it's playing across the world because of all the media that's surrounding it. At the moment, outside the Portuguese police station, there are crowds which are about a mile long, about 400 people who have actually come out to actually, A, report on it, but actually to watch events unfold. In a way, it's almost it's so big. We had a tragic case a few years ago of two little girls who went missing and were found murdered, and a murderer was caught by the name of Ian Huntley, who's now serving a jail sentence. That's the last time I remember something as big as this involving children. That's how big it is. It is phenomenally big. And every inch of the way, people are covering the twists and turns. Not only that, the McCanns, Jerry McCann, the father, is writing a blog. And this is now day 127. And his emotions, the roller coaster of what it must be like for him, is actually put down into words. So all those elements are what's keeping the story alive. And, of course, nobody's been found. It's a big, big mystery. Where is Maddie McCann?
Well, when Maddie McCann was abducted, I guess as the story goes now, her parents were having dinner sort of close by. And I know there was a lot of back and forthing in the British press about if they were somewhat responsible for this. Has sentiment kind of gone with them or against them in the last months?
I think it's difficult to tell, but there are people who are sort of wanting the child to come back. That's their primary concern, that they don't want to apportion blame. They want to make sure that that Madeleine is still alive, and then the recriminations can come afterwards. Now, both Jerry McCann and Kate have actually gone on camera and said, look, it was an awful mistake. We shouldn't have done it. And I think the British public have sort of rallied behind them, certainly their friends. They live in a little village called Rothley, which is in Leicester, which is about 10 minutes from where I live, actually. And there's this monument in the middle of the village itself, and yellow ribbons were tied around that monument. You remember the Dawn song, "Tie a Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree"?
Sure.
It's that sort of idea. And the whole village has gone trying to show their support on that. And I get the sense when I speak to people that this is an awful tragedy. Now, the parents are going through hell at the moment. Let's support them. Once Madeleine's found, then we can look into the inquest of exactly who did what and why and what happened.
Well, let's hold out hope, even though it's probably a small bit of hope, that this will have some sort of not sad ending. BBC's Barney Chowdhury, thank you so much for joining us and walking us through that story. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
So, Allison?
Yes.
Just after this break, I'm thinking about taking a little stroll down to that gigantic white tent that's sprung up next door to our studios here, Fashion Week. I should go check it out, see what's what.
Excellent. In the meantime, I will get myself prepared to hear some music from some edgy young singer on YouTube who apparently already had a record contract for 2 years before the videos went up on YouTube. We'll get to the bottom of that story. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News, blogging at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Allison Stewart.
I'm Luke Burbank. Hey, Allison, we have a big announcement at the end of the show today.
It's huge.
Don't forget.
Extraordinary.
It's going to be, I don't want to oversell it, but it could be life-changing.
Could be huge. Luke, I need you to do something.
Okay.
Been walking by those tents in Bryant Park every day on my way to work. Seeing all the fabulous people walking in with their little mini tiny cell phones to their heads, their $9,000 handbags.
All right, I'm gonna do some recon. I mean, gosh, we're in the same building as, like, you know, Michael Kors and all these fabulous designers. It seems like a match for us. So I'm gonna go down there. I'm gonna call you when you're done with this interview and give you like the full update. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Good luck. For those of you who are not in the know. Luke's trying to leave, but knocking things over. Goodbye. For those of you who are not in the know, in New York City this week, it is Fashion Week.
Not content with dominating the world of music, no doubt star Gwen Stefani managed to pull in the A-list crowd for her latest catwalk show at New York's Fashion Week.
It's a big time for all the fabulous people out there, and we kind of have a ringside seat. We're able to look at it outside of the window of our building. Now, there's this major tent where all the runway shows take place. It's right across the street in Bryant Park. Apparently, some 14,000 people go to these shows over the course of the 10 days. 3,000 of them press, including our own Luke Burbank, sort of. He's going to go down and look in the window anyway. We didn't really get press passes, even though we're in the hood, but we're still going to do a report nonetheless, and we're also going to rely on the skills of one Michael Musto. Of course, he is from The Village Voice, the gossip columnist, which means he's getting to go to all the shows. So, Michael, when you think about it, an entire year of creative work can come down to 15 minutes on the catwalk.
Oh, it's so high pressure, Allison. It's horrifying. And I have a shocking admission to make. I'm actually not going to any of the shows. I find them gruesomely boring. I'm just going to the Fashion Week events, okay? I will go to the after parties because you might get a gift bag. So it's far, true. No, but you might.
I have to tell you, I used to back in my previous life when I was a little bit fabulous, I went to a lot of these shows over a couple of years. They're not that interesting. That's the dirty secret.
It's torture. You see basically bulimic, drug-addicted models trying to walk down a runway, and they're selling merchandise that is not for me. I do wear women's clothes, but I'm not going to buy it. It's too expensive. And, you know, I'd rather give my seat to somebody in the industry. But it's fun just doing the Fashion Week whirl. I mean, the whole thing started with this party for something called MAOPR, but you get there, and there was a gigantic garbage truck that had fallen into a sinkhole, which I thought was symbolic of the whole week. And so the party was canceled.
Oh, no.
So everybody held their nose and went on to the next event, which was a Van Cleef & Arpels party.
Oh, the very fabulous, expensive, and
high-end jewelry.
Jewelry. Yeah.
So as this British girl kept calling it, it was Van Cleef & Arpels. Are you going to Van Cleef & Arpels? And they put on this big, lavish production. There was like a French singer channeling Piaf, and they had topless dancers coming out with, you know, showing off their puppies and everything. And I don't know, as I left, I got a footprint mark on my forehead from the paparazzi running over me to get to Misha Barton. Who is Misha Barton?
She's a tall, skinny.
She used to be in the OC or something.
Teen girl. Type actress.
So, she always has like a deer in the headlight look. I also loved Eve, the singer, on the red carpet as I was leaving on her BlackBerry.
And with the ankle bracelet. She's got the alcohol monitoring bracelet as she's wearing
well, that's
her
the
stilettos.
Accessory, let's face it. Everyone who's anything has that.
Well, a big part, this just must be like shooting fish in a barrel for you as a gossip columnist, because so much of this is about who can you get to come to your show and your party. Am I right?
Yes, and I actually think they pay celebrities. I mean, that's one easy way to get them. You just write a check. And different celebrities obviously have different fees. Misha Barton's fee is like $5 and a cracker. but if you want Sarah Jessica Parker, it's going to cost you thousands. And you also lavish them with some free, you know, couture. That always gets them there.
Yeah, you know what? I'm always amazed about these people who have tremendous amounts of money and have these high-powered positions, and then they want free things. They expect free things at these parties and these shows.
I actually don't fault them for that. I think if you're in a position to get free things, that's when you should demand it. And I mean, most of these people are in that position because they demanded free things their whole life. So they totally deserve it.
Now, is there any part about this that people still go for the fashion? Let's be serious for a minute. I mean, are the editors really there looking for what's going to be on the next pages of their next fall book?
Well, Fashion Week attracts two types of people. One are the serious industry insiders, like the editors, like the buyers, who are there to do their job and to see what the next season's clothes are going to look like. They're really there for a serious reason. But then you have all these crashers and wannabes and fabulosities who just want to be around the buzz and the excitement, and they kind of pollute the whole thing. You know, they're gross, and they're always fighting for front row seats. Like, they can't be validated enough. They always want, you know, the next. If they have front row, they'd rather be on the actual runway. And it makes for an interesting circus, I'll say that much.
For people who question whether this is a big deal or not, it is on the front page of one of the New York City tabloids today, a picture of two actresses whispering to each other in the front row at a big show. Is there any designer at this point who is as big a star as the celebrities who are showing up?
I sort of think Marc Jacobs is the golden boy of fashion. Mm-hmm. He actually has two shows, and he's just huge. He's become this amazing icon. He has this young ex-hustler boyfriend, which has somehow even helped his career more. It's made him sexy, despite it, I think, being the sign of a midlife crisis. But he really is the American arbiter of style, so he's in that position. He also favors all these weird celebrities who usually have been incarcerated. Like, he loves celebrating people like Lil' Kim and Winona Ryder, so that makes him bizarrely edgy as well.
I know. The lines on his clothes are really beautiful. He's a talented guy. Hey, Michael Musto, thank you so much for sharing a part of your Fashion Week with us.
Thank you, Allison. Have fun. Bye-bye.
Bye. As we said, Fashion Week taking place right under our noses here in Bryant Park. So we sent Luke downstairs across the street. He's given us a ring. So are you so fashionable now that you won't speak to me, Luke?
Allison, can you hear me?
I can.
I totally got in.
Did you really? Where are you?
But then I totally got kicked out like 1 second later. It was unbelievable. We just, I was walking, I was on the phone listening to you and Michael Musto. So I think I just looked really, like I couldn't be bothered to show my press pass. And I got all the way into some backstage area where people were doing their makeup. I got in the white tent.
That is hilarious. So, okay, so as long as you were in there, what did you observe?
I saw some incredibly, incredibly thin ladies sitting at a table with lights, like they were doing their makeup. I guess they were probably the models. And then I saw a lot of the press that was standing around looking way too cool for school. And then a lady, it was like one of those McDonald's drive-through like headsets, yelled at me and Wynn Rosenfeld and told us we had to leave. and so that was kind of it. But it was a magical like 15 seconds. I think what I'm realizing about the people that work in the periphery, because of course now I've been relegated back to the periphery, that if you cover fashion, I think you have to kind of pick one of two things. Either you aspire to actually look like the models and the fashionable people, because some of these, you know, photographers and other industry types who I see hanging around here are really attractive themselves. You know, like
sure.
they're wearing sort of couture-y stuff and they're looking very awesome. So there are those people who I kind of mistake for models for a second. And then there are the people that are just like, forget it. I'm not even trying. Like, this is just going to be embarrassing. And I think I'm sitting by one of those guys right now. He's probably going about 260 pounds. He has no shirt on. And he's sunning himself right next to Bryant Park. He probably weighs more than all of the models in the fashion show, which I think is Max Azria is what's going on right now. He probably weighs as much as all of them combined.
Oh, that's actually a fancy show. You managed to sneak in 15 seconds. Yeah.
I didn't know. We should have sent you down because I didn't know what to do when I got in. I just got all shaky and nervous, and I blew my own cover. You would have gone and sat down somewhere and grabbed a bottle of Cristal and just enjoyed yourself.
I love that you were busted literally by the fashion police.
I know, and they were way scarier than the real police. I've been busted by the real police and by the fashion police, and I'll say the fashion police are scarier. So, Allison, here's the thing. We work in this building with all this fashion. We're called the freaking Bryant Park Project, and we can't get into Fashion Week.
Yeah.
But I'm going to declare in front of all of our listeners that we, by the next time, when do they do this again? In the wintertime?
In the spring.
Oh, in the spring.
Yeah.
By this spring, we are going to be running this thing.
You think?
I'm going to at least be through the doors that I'm not allowed to go through. Maybe they'll make me stay in their lobby, but at least there will be more access than I've managed to get right now.
Well, at least we know for next time we need to put a headset on you and give you a walkie-talkie, and you'll look official. Yeah. Nobody will bug you.
Yeah, I think also part of the problem is that I really, as a person who's of normal weight,
yes,
I immediately stuck out. As soon as I got in the tent, it was clear there had been a security breach.
All right, Luke Burbank reporting live from Fashion Week. Get yourself back up here. We still have some show to do, and we have that major announcement from the Bryant Park Project.
I don't want the elevator guy who doesn't ever let you in the elevator. I hope he doesn't stop me. We'll see how that goes.
All right. Good luck with that.
Okay, bye.
All right. While we wait for Luke, let's get back up to the studio. We're going to check in with our own Rachel Martin with a little bit of the news.
This is NPR.
Hi, everyone. Here are the headlines. The U.S. Senate today voted overwhelmingly to adopt legislation that would slash government subsidies to support student loans. And the money saved would also increase student aid by $20 billion. The subsidy cuts are expected to hurt the profits of major lenders such as Sallie Mae, Citigroup, and others, according to industry analysts. The House of Representatives is expected to vote later today. President Bush has said he would sign the bill if it gets to his desk. And after flirting with the idea of the presidency for months, Fred Thompson has finally stepped up and made a commitment to run for the White House. Yesterday, he officially hit the campaign trail in Iowa, trying to convince voters there that he's their guy.
I am determined that we make the decisions that will leave us a stronger nation, a more prosperous nation, and a more united nation. And that's why I'm running for the presidency of the United States.
The former senator from Tennessee and Law and Order star is trying to craft himself as the great conservative hope, pledging limited government and an aggressive foreign policy. It's unclear whether Thompson has a war chest to rival top GOP contenders Mitt Romney or Rudy Giuliani, who've already amassed millions to wage their campaigns. But Thompson appeared ready to take on the challenge. Yesterday he told the crowd, "The preseason is over. Let's get on with it." And indeed, the preseason is over. The first game of the NFL was last night, and the Indianapolis Colts trounced the New Orleans Saints 41-10. Those are the headlines. Back to you, Allison.
All right, Rachel, you know what? There's actual video of Luke's escapade,
apparently.
Yes, it's
just
true.
Now?
Yeah, so we're going to post that on the blog later on today. We'll actually get to see Luke busted into the tent.
Frightening.
And busted and having to leave. It's going to be something
tune in.
Good.
Tune in.
NPR.org/Bryant Parks, where you're going to be able to see that. Time now for another installment of Ripped Off from the Headlines. No Law and Order sounder? Next time. It's a story that someone else reported, but we wish we had thought of first. Marié Digby has a beautiful voice, a beautiful face, and a record deal. Now, the deal with Hollywood Records was announced in a press release after Digby became a bit of a YouTube star for acoustic cover versions of radio hits from artists like Linkin Park, as well as the hip-hop song of the summer, Umbrella. Here's Digby's take.
When the sun shines, we shine together. Know that I'll be here forever. Then I'll always be your friend. Took a note, now I'm sticking out to the end. Now that it's raining more than ever, know that we still have each other. You can stand under my umbrella. You can stand under my umbrella.
No wonder Hollywood Records signed her. Only, apparently they signed her 2 years ago. And the YouTube of it all seems to be part of a marketing campaign, or so says Ethan Smith, as reported in an article he wrote for the Wall Street Journal. Hey, Ethan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So when did Marié Digby really sign to a major record label?
Late in 2005, so coming up on 2 years ago.
So what was the tip-off that she wasn't solely an independent artist singing to the camera and posting her clips on YouTube?
Well, after making a few calls around to people in the music industry to try to see how we could get in touch with her, it quickly became clear that she had signed a deal with Hollywood Records, and I initially assumed that she had recently signed a deal with Hollywood Records, given just kind of the way she was presented to the public. It sounded as though she had achieved all this exposure on her own, getting interviewed on the Carson Daly Show and on a commercial radio station here in L.A., a song featured on an MTV series called The Hills. So all that seemed incredibly impressive, and of course Hollywood Records or anybody else would want to sign her, but a couple more phone calls revealed that she'd actually signed to Hollywood in 2005, and Hollywood had actually brokered all those licensing and promotional opportunities.
Oh. Hey, sorry, Ethan, where are you calling? Where are you calling me from? Are you wanted? Is that a police chopper looking for you?
It is L.A.
Yeah, I'm in L.A. You know, they're always helicopters.
Okay.
Over.
So this her YouTube, her rise on YouTube, it led to all of these different appearances, or does it appear that the record company had a hand in those?
No, it seems as though all this sort of promotional stuff initially started with radio programmers at a radio station here in LA seeing her video on YouTube. That, you know, that really happened.
So that's organic.
Yes, that's organic. However, to play her, the version of her song that was posted on YouTube was recorded in, you know, much too low quality to play on the radio, and they, you know, through the same sort of music industry contacts I used to find out she was on Hollywood Records, they found she was on Hollywood Records, and Hollywood had in fact already had ready to go a you know, high quality studio version of the song that they had made in, you know, they'd made in a recording studio, which they delivered to the radio station to play, you know, to broadcast on the air. And
now that sounds like a street cleaner to me. Is that a street cleaner?
Now that's a street sweeper.
This is my LA.
I went inside my garage to get some quiet, and now there's a street sweeper going by.
Well, I appreciate you attempting to find someplace quiet.
Maybe I can get in my car. That would be really
poor guy, you're going to be in like your hall linen closet in a minute. So here's, have you been on Marié Digby's MySpace page recently?
Oh, sure.
Okay, so you know that she has responded to your article, and she refers to you or your co-writer as some schmuck from the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, okay. Okay, schmuck. Then she writes, "This loser took every genuine thing I said and made it sound like I'm acting, that this whole thing is scripted. Do you think that my record label came to my house, my bathroom, and told me what songs to sing and told me in what matter of weeks I'd become a YouTube phenomenon? Wake up. I am grateful to be signed, but you know what? Labels don't come to your house, hold your hand, and direct YouTube videos for you." Is she right in any way? Not that you're a schmuck, but that...
Sure, she's right, and she's not actually disagreeing with anything we said in the article. I understand that it's uncomfortable for her to have this sort of sleight of hand revealed, and so I can see why she had an emotional response. The fact is, the record label did buy her the computer and the camera she used to make the videos. They talked to her about the idea that it would be useful to record cover songs, covers of current popular hits, because nobody's out there searching for Mariah Digby. If she posted original songs, presumably nobody would ever find her because nobody would know to be looking for her.
Right, you'd be on YouTube and you want to say, oh, I want to see a live version of Umbrella, or I want to see a live version of Linkin Park song. You type in the name of the song and up comes her version.
Right, and that's all we said. And as Debbie Gibson's manager said in an email to me after the story ran, ethical considerations aside, the fact is she delivered the goods and people responded. And we're not... I don't think anything in the article takes away from that. The fact that fans really like this, and there's nothing about the fact that she is or isn't on a major label or who bought the camera or anything else that changes that.
It was just that the idea that her signing was presented as a result of the YouTube rise is the one thing where it might feel a little shady.
Yeah, and that there are numerous instances where I think it's fair to say that there were deliberate choices made on her part and on the record label's part to hide the fact that she was signed to a major label, because that makes a more compelling story. And it's true, it is compelling, and it worked.
What does it say about the bigger state of music in terms of the idea that this woman was found, quote unquote, on YouTube rather than through traditional means of a promotion guy going to a radio station?
I think it pretty clearly shows that the major record labels are in a very difficult position these days. All these kind of centralized media channels that they used to be able to dominate with money are much less influential than they used to be. A major label used to just essentially be able to go buy airtime for any artist they decided was a priority, and you could pretty much guarantee a certain level of sales. If you put enough money in the front end, you'd get a certain amount of money out the back end. That doesn't work anymore, which is great for independent artists who can go on YouTube and get found by the masses. It's more troublesome for major labels whose business model is built on the idea of promoting their products through sort of more centralized media channels.
Ethan Smith from the Wall Street Journal, thanks for sharing your reporting with us. Hey, where are you now? It's nice and quiet.
I'm sitting inside my garage.
Oh. We appreciate the effort. A for effort from Ethan Smith from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks, Ethan.
It's the legitimate LA experience.
If I hear that Tay Zonde of Chocolate Rain is a record company construction, I don't know what I'll do. I'll cry myself to sleep.
I'll have to hold you.
And keep in mind, Tay Zonde has 10 times the YouTube views that Mario.
Oh my goodness.
Now that's scary. So Ethan, thanks a lot.
And some still feel the pain. Coming up, we're going to chat about the NFL with maybe the youngest NFL prognosticator out there. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.
Professional football in America is a special game, a unique game, played nowhere else on earth. It is a rare game. The men who play it make it so.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. That's some fun.
Coming now, buddy.
This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. I'm Luke Burbank, getting very, very excited about football, which is here. Last night, the Indianapolis Colts stomped the New Orleans Saints in Indianapolis, and that is the official start of the season this weekend. There are going to be lots and lots of games. And to talk about the NFL season, we decided to go to one of the more hallowed football cities in America, Allison.
Where is that?
It's a real cradle of NFL greatness, Caldwell, Idaho.
We have a lot of Idaho on the show. Rachel Martin's from Idaho. Josh Ritter was from Idaho. Larry Craig, Idaho.
A lot of Idaho on the story. Well, we've got another Idahoan on our hands. His name's Andy Benoit. If he was from somewhere else, he might be Andy Benoit, but he's from Idaho. He has BenoitMedia.com. Andy, you are 21, but you started putting together your NFL preview as a summer hobby when you were like 11?
That's correct. And by the way, you had to mention Larry Craig from Idaho. I started as a summer hobby when I was 11 years old. We were on a family trip to Green Bay, which is kind of the football mecca in the United
States. It's second to Caldwell, Idaho, I think, in most people's minds.
It's second to Caldwell, Idaho. You could have at least said Boise, Idaho. We got Boise State Broncos. But anyway, we have I couldn't sleep at night on the family trip, and I couldn't keep my ADD in check during the day. So my parents gave me a pad and pen and just said, write what you know about football, write what you think is going to happen this season. I did that, and one thing led to another, and Mom offered to type it when we got home that year, and so she would type. I would write by hand and then cut pictures out and paste a scrapbook together, and that was my summer hobby for several years. And then it became a job when Random House picked it up when I was in high school, which was about 3 years ago, but it's always felt like a hobby. I mean, it's something I just always love to do.
Well, now you're very fancy. You've got AndyBenoit.com. You're on the internets and the interwebs. Okay, let's start with your top five NFL teams this season. Who are the biggies?
Boy, it's tough not to say Indianapolis after last night, but I'm going to say New England is who I think will win the Super Bowl. I'm going to put them right at the top there. I think Baltimore is looking very strong this season. I think Cincinnati is another strong team as well. So I'm going to mention all AFC teams here because the AFC is such a superior conference. San Diego and Denver maybe round out the top five. I guess I'm going to have to give you six because we have to fit Indianapolis in there somewhere. I think it's New England, Baltimore, Indianapolis, San Diego in that order.
I noticed that in Vegas, I think New England is 5-1 to win the Super Bowl. They're getting the best odds right now.
Well, they were one game short a year ago, and then they added about four or five big-time players. I mean, they added about seven or eight players, but four or five big-time players, Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Adalius Thomas. And so you give any team that's a game away from the Super Bowl already with Tom Brady at quarterback and Bill Belichick at coach, and you give them five new weapons to use, it's hard not to think they're going to be the champs.
All right, who do you have as a kind of surprise pick, a team that was really lousy last year that you think might surprise some people?
I think Green Bay can be. I don't know if I'd say Green Bay was really lousy, but they're my BenoitMedia.com surprise team this season. They're the team I highlight as.
It doesn't trouble you that their quarterback is 439?
400. Well,
that might be on the young side.
He's on the young side. You know what? I think Green Bay is actually, even with Brett Favre and his Stone Age, his Stone Age age, I think the Packers are the youngest team in the NFL. And I think that's part of the reason they can be a surprise team this season. That defense is a lot better than people realize. And if everyone stays healthy on offense, and that's a key because Green Bay does not have a lot of depth, but if everyone in the starting lineup stays healthy on offense, I think the Packers can win 10 games this season.
All right. Do you think there's a team that's really overrated? Somebody did awesome last year, but they're due to fall.
Well, I think I just said San Diego's a top five team. I still think a lot of people think they are a Super Bowl favorite. I'd say they're a little overrated in that sense. I think Denver will actually give them a run for their money in the AFC West.
Now, for people that don't follow the NFL, what happened last year with San Diego was they were just destroying teams right up until they got in the playoffs and lost to New England, and as a total surprise to everyone because they, what were they, like 16-1, 16-2?
Yeah, coming into that game, I think they had lost twice. One of the losses was very early in the season, though. Yeah, they were clearly the most powerful team last season. They had the league MVP. They still have him now, LaDainian Tomlinson, who set all kinds of records. They had probably the most dominant defensive player in the game in Sean Merriman, who they also still have. No team has as many superstars, top upper echelon superstars as San Diego. That being said, they made the coaching change this offseason. They brought in Norv Turner because Marty Schottenheimer couldn't get along with the GM. Norv Turner's a downgrade from Schottenheimer. They didn't win it last season. The AFC got a lot better, and I think that makes San Diego overrated if you're picking them as a Super Bowl team.
Andy, just take me through your average Sunday. Like, what do you have, like 400 TVs going on?
You know, that would be nice. And I used to, when I lived at home when I was young, I would take my dad's TV out of the bathroom and set it up downstairs next to our big TV, and then I'd get in trouble for it.
That's some ghetto picture-in-picture you're working there, Andy.
Yes, that's exactly right. One, you know, rabbit ears on one TV, and the other one's an HD widescreen, so it was an act of desperation that always backfired because Dad didn't find it funny. So I got used to watching on one TV. I'm a college student, and I put a lot of the money I saved up into a big widescreen HD TV, so I have the best TV you could possibly have, just one of them, though. And I set up my wall. I decorate the living room. I put cards of each team on the wall, and so I look up at the wall, and the cards are lined up to see who plays who. And, it's lit up, and there's decorations for whatever time of year it is. I make a big festivity out of it. And then I watch the games. And the funny part is I usually watch alone because I change the channel so much. I have the volume real high. I wouldn't be good company to watch with. So it's a mecca for any football fan, but I'm the only football fan in there. And I start at 9 a.m. and I go as long as the games let me go.
I have to imagine you're one of the only football sort of handicappers who also credits their mom. And Allison, what did you say you had? What did you have for breakfast
today? Did your mom make you zucchini bread for breakfast?
You know, they asked me to do that as the voice test in the back, and then I started, and I thought, I wonder if they're going to mention that. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. She made zucchini bread last week, and then we went up to the McCall, or a resort town, as a family this weekend, and I took the zucchini bread home back to my apartment with me. So she made zucchini bread. I don't know if it was for me, but I have it, and that's what I ate for breakfast.
Buddy, don't look zucchini bread in the mouth.
That's right.
It's good.
Yeah.
Gift zucchini bread.
Give in the mouth. I don't know what that means. Andy Benoit of AndyBenoit.com.
BenoitMedia.com.
BenoitMedia.com.
Took AndyBenoit.com.
No way.
Yeah,
that's got to be a depressing realization.
I'm not using it for anything. So we went. I like BenoitMedia.com better anyway.
All right. Well, Andy Benoit, thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to tell you, if you're single, I think our newscaster, Rachel Martin, might be interested. She's just has this look on her face like, what a cutie.
Hi, Andy. I just want to give a little Idaho shout out. So happy to know that there are some hardcore football fans who are illuminating football fans around the country, and that you're doing us proud.
Well, good. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Get a room, you two.
The control room just helped me out with my bad statement. I should have said, don't kick the zucchini bread horse in the mouth.
Don't look it in the mouth? I don't even know what that phrase means. All right, Allison, what are we doing now?
We're going to the most time of the show. We take a look at the most emailed, most searched, most read articles on various news websites and other sources online. Lauren's in the studio.
Hi.
Lauren, you've been looking at all the most today. What do you got?
I have the fourth most searched term on Technorati. Do you guys know that site?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Is for the name Vanessa Hudgens. Do you guys know this name?
I do, but I have a 13-year-old.
All right. She's an actress on High School Musical, big Disney show. She's 18, and this week some naked pictures of her. Actually, I think the National Enquirer broke the story a couple weeks ago, and then today they somehow got on the internet, so everyone can see them now.
And big search topic?
Big search popular.
At Google search terms, it's really funny because no one can spell her name. In the top 10 is Vanessa Hudgens with a T-C-H, Vanessa Hudgens, G-G-I-N-S, D-G-N-S.
But they're determined.
They are determined to find these pictures of this poor girl.
She apparently took the photos for her boyfriend, who is Zac Efron, who's also on the show.
Yeah, if you have been in any kind of supermarket and looked at any magazine rack, you see thousands of pictures of this dude because he's in Hairspray.
Right.
He plays Link Larkin. So, all right, all of you people that want to look at bad stuff like that, I guess you have some legitimate reason because it is one of the most searched terms.
It's true. All right, the top emailed story on NPR.org is called Why Women Read More Than Men. And it's somewhat anecdotal, I would say. They have some statistics in there, like 57% of Americans said they'd read a book in 2002, which I thought was weird. I thought it was weird you wouldn't lie. If someone said, did you read a book last year? No, didn't get to it.
Right. Like 43% of people were totally honest.
Yeah, totally. But the article is saying this could be the case for a number of reasons. Women may have more empathy, so they may have more desire to read novels. Also, as children, young women have more patience, so they can sit still for much longer, so they cultivate sort of long reading habits, so they're able to read long novels. But and also, my favorite detail was that women talk more in social settings and use more words.
That they learned from reading.
Right.
Wait, wasn't there something in there, too, about men tended to read nonfiction more?
It's true. That was from a bookstore owner in D.C. She said that men always go to the nonfiction section. But the actual study said that all across the board, women read more than men. Women read 9 books a year compared to 5 from men. Hmm. All right, the last story I have for you is from Joe Palca, NPR story, about these crazy moray eels that have 2 sets of teeth. They have a set in the front and a set in their throat. So let's hear a clip of that.
Mm-hmm. By the way, while we're getting that clip lined up, do we have that in there, guys? We've officially catapulted Joe Palca into most emailed status.
Yeah,
he was on the show last week.
Well, whoa, you know what's funny is he campaigns now for most emailed. He campaigned on our show last week.
Did he?
Yes, it was really kind of cute.
All right. Hey Dan, do we have the clip? Doesn't look like it. Okay, keep rolling.
All right, this is
what
she says. She says that they have these teeth in their throat that come forward. They like spring forward into the eel's mouth and capture the prey. And it's nasty. And Joe Palca comes back and says, if you've seen the movie Alien, you know exactly what she's talking about.
That's exactly where my brain went as soon as you said it was, oh my gosh, it's so much like Alien.
Nasty.
And I hope I never see a moray eel up close, ever.
All right. Lauren Sporer, thank you so much. And we got Rachel Martin in there. Are you part of the
Yeah, I had something to say. You totally forgot about me. Story, it was on several of the most emailed lists this last couple of days. Luciano Pavarotti passed away yesterday. Most people know this. 71-year-old finally succumbed to pancreatic cancer. But what you may not have known about Pavarotti was that he was kind of this crossover artist, if you will. I mean, when I started doing research on this, you figure out that he had been on stage with the likes of Ricky Martin, Celine Dion. He did these charity benefits for children. And we've actually got a clip of him singing with none other than the Spice Girls for a charity event they were holding for kids in Liberia. We found it on the internet. I think we've got some of that audio right here. That's right. Pavarotti was wearing a tux of Spice Girls in suits and bras, which I thought was a nice touch.
That must have been an awesome feeling for Pavarotti. Like, I'm a trained singer. I'm amazing. I have one of the great tenor voices of all time, and I'm standing next to Mel B. Hey, my phone's still on.
And Rachel, that was my bad that we were going to skip you. I thought that we were going forward, but so I have to take responsibility for that.
It's okay.
As people might have heard. It's okay.
All right. Well, they're telling me in my ear, though, that all is well because Rachel will have an important part in this segment as she now brings us the news of the hour. I can do the sound effect with my mouth.
Hi, everyone. Here I am. I'm going to tell you what's going on in the news. A federal judge has struck down controversial parts of the U.S. Patriot Act, calling them unconstitutional. The ruling by U.S. District Judge Victor Marrero in New York ordered the FBI to stop obtaining email and telephone data from private companies without a warrant. The judge called this tactic unconstitutional, and he called it the legislative equivalent of breaking and entering. There's disturbing news about suicide rates in young people. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, suicides among children and young adults rose by 8% in 2004. That's the largest rise in 15 years. And take a guess at who said this. I'm sorry for taking advantage of you, and here's $100 for your trouble. Well, that's what Steve Jobs, CEO of Apple Computers, told iPod fanatics, who shelled out $600 for an iPhone back in June when the phones came out, and people camped out in long lines to get them. But since then, the price of the iPhone has dropped by $200. Steve Jobs said the dramatic price cut was an effort to boost demand ahead of the holiday season. That's the news. Back to you, Luke and Allison.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
it's a nice segue for us, Rachel, because we've been promising throughout the show to roll out a big announcement mm-hmm. here at the BPP headquarters. We just got through Labor Day, mm-hmm. and, you know, I was actually taking bets about when we'd have our first Christmas announcement
yeah.
commercial.
Yeah, you know how
flyer
it is.
In the
every
mail.
Year, every year it gets earlier and earlier. It kind of stresses you out,
little
too,
bit.
Because you'd never know when you're going to have to get hip to it. So we just decided...
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful.
To just do it now.
It's officially Christmas season, everybody.
One, two, three.
Merry Christmas!
From the Bryant Park Project to your home.
And we took this quite seriously, our staff.
Yeah.
Their stockings hanging around.
They're hanging by the fire with care.
Exactly. And we dispatched our own Wynn Rosenfeld out to ask people how their holiday shopping's going at this point. And he was brave enough to do that.
Oh, hey, can I talk to you for a second? I'm from NPR News, and I'll do a piece on Christmas shopping.
Yeah.
And did you just get this for Christmas?
No.
Shopping done early?
No.
Have you gotten any of your Christmas shopping done yet?
No, not yet.
Wait, can I talk to you for a second? Because you look, are you Santa Claus?
Am I Santa Claus? No, but I'm a helper. I've always helped Santa Claus.
That's nice.
Yeah.
What are the big toys this season, you think, for Christmas?
Big toy, all solid wood and no lead paint.
Hey, Spider-Man, do you have a second to talk to NPR News?
NPR?
Are you guys just coming out of Toys R Us?
Yeah.
So are you guys getting your holiday shopping done, your Christmas
shopping
done?
Yeah.
What are the hot toys this year?
Hello Kitty.
Where your camera at?
What a camera.
Where your camera?
Do you guys have a second to talk to NPR about the holiday season?
Oh, okay, sure.
Cool. I noticed...
it's not the holiday season.
Aren't you cold?
Not at all.
What's the main thing that you want this year?
The Wii.
Are you guys here for Christmas shopping?
No.
What are you getting? You're not getting, have you gotten your Christmas shopping done yet?
Yeah, we've done it all.
You have?
Yeah, we've all done it.
Do you feel like New York in the wintertime is really magical?
Yes, super magical.
Season's greetings from all of us at the Bryant Park Project.
You've got to see this video. He has this hat on that he bought at Kmart, this like totally middle of winter hat, and he's just harassing people in the streets of Manhattan.
Considering it's 80 degrees outside, I thought it was rather... cheeky of him to say, oh, the winter weather, enjoying the winter weather in D.C.
In New York. You know, it only made sense because there's all this stuff in the news about the primaries politically. All these states are trying to move their primaries up. Everybody
sure.
wants to be relevant by being, you know, early on that train. And we just thought we're going to be the most relevant Christmas-related show out there.
Absolutely. So Merry Christmas, Luke.
Oh, thanks, Allison.
I got some shopping to do, so I think we need to wrap this
show
up.
Yeah, this feels like actual Christmas to me in that I have no shopping done.
Well, I think that's it for this edition of the Bryant Park Project, the Christmas edition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You want to do that on the list?
Yeah, let's do it. Dan Pashman, who directed and produced MJ Davis. I thought we were going to go out with Christmas music, guys. Let's get in the Christmas spirit here. We've also got Matt Martinez, supervising senior producer. Lauren Sporer helped out. Rachel Martin on the newscast. Manoli Weatherall on the ones and twos. Sharon Hoffman watching dubiously from outside the glass.
She would be our executive producer.
Margaret Lowe Smith here, just to make us all nervous. I'm Luke Burbank. Did I leave anybody out? Wynn Rosenfeld and Ilya Marritz. And I'm Luke Burbank.
I'm Allison Stewart. This is the Bryant Park Project. Merry Christmas, everybody.
And to all a good night.